KUJZ is 95.3 The Score.
I hope you're ready. It's that time. Climb aboard, all aboard, for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
I got a bad feeling about this.
I can't take it anymore.
I am losing my mind.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
I know that, dude.
On Highway 99 in Junction City. Online at GuaranteeRV.com.
Alex is sitting there saying, what the heck are they talking about?
I would have Mariota out at 3 in the morning drunk, pawning his Heisman Trophy to get into an illegal poker house.
And now, a guy with lots of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
No, I mean, like, lots of issues.
Shut up and get on with the program. Dude is a snot.
And broadcasting them, searching for answer.
Who is this?
It's Steve Tannen.
Have another donut, you fat pig. And we get the let out, rocking you into the 5 o'clock hour on Sports Talk on a Monday. If I didn't notice Nick pointing at me, I'd be sitting here like this, watching this Oregon team operate. I'm going to go back and watch probably the entire second half, but their passing so far, it just seems to be off the charts. They've got a pretty big lead. It is at UConn. It's number 3 versus 4. ESPN is there, and they've been on point since the get-go. You do not get many opportunities like this in women's college basketball. First of all, if you don't play in their league and you're not like Louisville or obviously Tennessee or Notre Dame, traditionally they haven't matched up, but the opportunity has knocked, and while it's still very early, they've made a pretty darn good showing. Ruthie Hebert, I think, is approaching double-digit rebounds. Sabrina is on triple-double watch, and ESPN scrolled. Nobody has ever posted a triple-double against the Huskies during the Auriemma tenure, which has been pretty good. But anyway, we have the game on the radio. If you know that, you're probably listening on the radio. On KGN Newso 590. It's on TV, like I said, at ESPN2. But we're rolling along, singing a song. Couple of things. I don't know why this came up, but I had a couple of my friends start a little thread on Facebook, put out that Terry Bradshaw was not listed among the top 100 players in NFL history in, you know, celebration of the league centennial. And I was trying to point out that even though he's kind of our guy, being children of the 70s and 80s, and he won 4 Super Bowls, and he's great, and he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, you really have to do the math and understand how many tough cuts there were going to be. 100 players. That's one a year. Think about that. That means you take one from each year and leave out everybody else's in the NFL. I did the math. They estimated about 22,000 people have played in the NFL. 100's a really small percentage. It's a drop in the bucket, especially when you consider you got to have linemen. You got to have receivers. I mean, I'm not going to stand here and recite all the positions that you have there. And it's the old, you know, when somebody says, well, where do you put Durant and where do you put the late Kobe? And it's like some fans or players get upset. 7th, it's like, yeah, of the 18 million players that have ever strapped on an NBA jersey, I think maybe there's 5 better than you. Yeah, I don't know what that means. But anyway, I'm sure that there was agony. I mean, hell, who's thrown the most touchdown passes in the history of the NFL?
Drew Brees.
Right. He wasn't on the list. He's won a Super Bowl. And somebody goes, well, what about the fact that Staubach made it? Well, You know, Staubach didn't win four Super Bowls. He was in four Super Bowls. He was, really unique. He was an incredible leader. He didn't have quite the cast of Hall of Famers around him that Staubach did. I mean, don't get me wrong. They were the Dallas Cowboys and, who is it? Murchison and Landry. I mean, they built a machine that were in contention from about 1966 through and including about 1985. I mean, for 20 years, you could have made a case that it might be Dallas's year. I mean, it took the Ice Bowl to keep him out of the second Super Bowl. They lost one Super Bowl because of like 1,000 turnovers. And, yeah, that was an odd fast break.
We
went silent.
We both stopped doing radio to watch the television.
What happened? Mignon Moore stole the ball, threw a bounce pass to Sabrina, who tried to, like, if it was hockey, it would have been a drop pass for a slap shot at the point. And they ended up losing the ball. But, Oregon is up 16, 5.5 minutes to go in the third quarter. And I haven't followed a lot of the Huskies this year, but... They are a team that is what we used to say in horse racing is full of run. The men over the weekend, that was a painful watch against Stanford because they took a 9-point lead in the second half. And that's a good Stanford team. I mean, right now they're in any. It's not even a question. I mean, you look at the standings and... The Le Cardinal are on top. I mean, they're right there with Oregon and three losses at 16-5 with obviously the tiebreaker. But, over the weekend you had Cal, who was picked dead last, beat Oregon State at home. Arizona wins easy at Washington State. Arizona State wins at Washington. Since Washington lost their point guard, I didn't realize how bad it had gotten. Quade Green, who was originally transferring from Kentucky, then he had to be cleared. He got eligibility clearance. Then he found out he was found to be done because he was academically ineligible. So he got dismissed 4 weeks ago. At that time, he had two times more assists than anybody else on the team. How about this? 4 weeks later, he's still the team leader in assists. He has 31 more than any other Husky. And you saw, without him, they succumb to the press and pressure. They're 1-7 since he left. And the only win was against Oregon State at home, the second to last place team in the conference. So, I mean, this guy left the program and they have come unglued. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Steven. Steven, good afternoon. How you doing?
Good evening, Steve Dannon. I want to tell you, buddy, what is your reaction on the 49ers versus Chiefs? I can't believe the Chiefs pulled a win against the 49ers yesterday.
Thanks, Steven. That's something we've discussed. Once again, Kyle Shanahan is on the... receiving end of an awful collapse of an opposition who was able to pull off an historic comeback. And, you're not talking about October 27th against Jacksonville. You're talking a Super Bowl as a coordinator where he was unable to sustain and keep Brady and the Patriots off the field. And yesterday... execution is poor, and like when Nick asked during the lightning round, it's like you can't just stand here and blame the head coach. I mean, there were missed assignments, a lot of missed tackles, but you do that a lot when you're chasing Mahomes around in the backfield. And, you know, there's another team out there who's pretty good and has an absolute warlock playing the quarterback position.
But didn't he do more to lose the game at the end of the first half than he did with the lead late? Like, you get the, like, Kansas City, you know, runs on a third down or whatever, they don't convert, and then the clock just starts to tick away, and he lets it run and run and run, and they get the ball back, and there's a minute left, and then they call a run play, and then they take forever, and then they call a second run play, and all of a sudden, there's 30 seconds left, they call a timeout, and they throw a heave to Kittle, which gets called back because of pass interference, but what do you...
They only would have been able to kick a field goal at the end anyway.
Right, but if you call a timeout early, you stop the Chiefs from running an extra 40 seconds off the clock, and then you get into your two-minute drill where you pass the ball on first down instead of a run, and maybe you pick up some few yards and you get the offense rolling. Like Jimmy,
I agree. I'm very confused.
It didn't make any sense. And then you get later into the game where it's like, okay, Kyle, start calling the run plays, because the last time you were in a very similar situation, you messed it all up by not calling the run plays because you kept trying to be too aggressive. But you can be aggressive and kill the clock. Like, Andy Reid never won a Super Bowl because of bad clock management, and you've now blown two of them for bad clock management yourself.
I thought he fell into a dangerous trap the end of the half. He was playing the let's not risk anything. Because there was a juncture in the game where it looked like Kansas City was going to march in and take control, but then they held him to a field goal. Then they came down and didn't go three and out, but scored, and it was tied. And I think he was playing the... We're not going to do anything risky. We get the ball to start the second half, and it's like, the cliche fits, because you really need to dance with who brung you. And I said the words, and I was joking at the end of the half. I was like, he's taking the air out of the ball a little too soon.
Right.
It would be like trying to milk the shot clock in basketball in an 8-point game in the second quarter.
It's just like you're all in a tie game nonetheless. Like you're getting the ball back to start the third. You're literally in a situation where you can put points up on the board, get the ball back, and extend the lead a second time.
I'm with you, man.
You can go up by two scores like that. And he's just like, call some run plays. Oh, wait, we should have had an extra minute and a half a clock here. And Troy Aikman the entire time was like, I don't know why they're doing this with the clock. I don't understand. They could be going down the field to put points up, and they're actively just saying we're okay being tied.
And another thing, they reached the 30-yard line. Gould is like automatic.
Right.
And they had plenty of time. And my thought was, well, you could have the best of both worlds. You know, if you take a shot and all of a sudden it gets stopped, then dare them to burn their timeouts. You're still going to end up punting the ball. But man, in a tie game, what if you kick a field goal, then are getting the ball? I mean, he's kind of a gunslinger mentality, except the two times he could have got rings. It was really frustrating. It was an exercise in frustration.
Like Super Bowl 51 with the Falcons blowing the 28-3 lead came down to basically Devonta Freeman didn't pick up a block on a sack. There was a holding call on a play where they got a first down, and then there was like a strip. Like it came down to like a couple players had some bad mistakes, and the Patriots being the Patriots just absolutely
right,
capitalized.
The right team to leave the door open.
He made his biggest mistake and then had a half of football to make up for it and was still kind of making the same mistakes.
I don't like to say this because you don't know the personnel, you don't know the packages, you don't know the defensive adjustments, but there seemed multiple times where he was doing the play not to lose, if that makes sense, and just it didn't look like the same offense that had stomped on throats their previous two games. It was a little aggravating. Now, I was only looking at through the eyes of my betting account. If that had been the Giants doing that, I'd probably be screaming and yelling like a crazy person all show long. We're into the final minute 55 of the third quarter. Oregon is up 16 at UConn, 59-43, with Sabrina just took a horrible three after an offensive foul. So, tick, tick, tick. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Big B. Big B, good afternoon. How's it going?
I'm doing well. I just want to chime in on three things. The first being Nick's It's Lit segment with the Battle for Alberta. is there any air still in that studio? Because I think he sucked it all out with the excitement. That was hilarious.
Yeah, he completely lost his mind in a good way.
We had to crack a window. It's better now.
I hope you have some oxygen or a brown bag.
That was
impressive. I was 14 when Pulp Fiction came out. I rented it from Blockbuster. I actually got the soundtrack before I saw the movie, because when I saw the list of songs, and this was back in the Columbia House days, it was one of my first CDs that I got, you know, pick 12 free. Well, I saw the movie and rented it, and I was so confused, I had to rewind it, and I watched it again. But hard to believe that was 26 years ago.
Yeah, isn't that nuts?
The same year as Forrest Gump. A lot of good movies came out in 94. But finally, I heard Josh call it earlier. I was at the game Saturday versus the Jazz, and I hadn't been to a Blazers game in 2 years, and that was a thing of beauty to watch, especially with the Jazz. I mean, I think they hit their first five or six shots and a 10-point lead like 6 minutes in the first quarter. I'm going, well, here comes the letdown from the Laker game the previous
right.
night. And then, I mean, it was a thing of beauty to watch in person.
Yeah, Lillard, I'm going to use the word will. He was having none of it.
No, and to see that in person, I mean, we walked out of there. We actually left about 2 minutes to go because we had a concert to go to, shot and Ubered up. So, but anyway, appreciate the show. Sounds good today.
All right, take it easy, Big B. Yeah, between Jungle Boogie, My Wedding Song, Let's Stay Together by Al Green, you had Son of a Preacher Man, and even though The Girl You'll Be a Woman Soon, when I think Vincent went to see Uma when he was supposed to take his boss's wife on a date, the version by Urge Overkill of Girl, You'll Be a Woman Soon, Pulp Fiction soundtrack kicks some serious rear end. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's get right back to it and bring in Jeff. Jeff, good afternoon. How's it going?
Hey, I'm well, thanks, Steve. How are you?
All right, what's up?
Hey, I had a comment about your questioning Shanahan's play calling there at the end of the half. I thought we threw that bomb to Kittle that got flagged for pass interference.
Yeah, but why did he wait so long? Because remember, he let 40 seconds burn off, and that pass would have they would have had to kick the field goal right then and there with 6 seconds to go.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I mean, he definitely did call an interesting odd game at times, for sure. But anyway, you didn't talk about that pass. I mean, that was an aggressive play in an otherwise, like, let's just ride it out portion of the half.
Not to mention what I will go to my grave saying is a garbage offensive PI call. He did not impede the defender from doing his job. A lot of people said it was the letter of the law. I'm a no sale on that one.
Well, as much as the referee swallowed the whistle most of the night for both sides,
right.
It was an interesting call. Yeah, you're right, letter of the law, whatever, but it's not like the defender tried to sell the pass interference as, you know, a flop or whatever. That didn't happen, so I don't know what to say. It's disappointing.
Yeah, I could hear it in your voice, Jeff. Appreciate the call. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline.
I have no problem with trying to go deep to Kittle. That worked out very well. That was going to
right.
set something up. Call that on first down. Like you're letting all of this time run away, and you're calling runs on first and second down, and then in a third down panic when you know there's less than 20 seconds left, you're like, right, now we have to hurry. That's the issue with it there. Like you call a timeout when the Chiefs realize they're going to be punting on fourth down, stop the clock, and a two-minute offense. Jimmy G in the two-minute offense against New Orleans when they were on the road in the Superdome to try and win a game, completely different, you know, motives and everything. It's the end of a game rather than the end of a half or whatever, so the motivation is different. But you can get into that mode with Jimmy G where you're throwing outs. You've got two more timeouts you can use. You just move the ball a little bit.
Management is a pet peeve of mine, no question about it. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, as we're getting down to the final 9 seconds of the third quarter at Stores with Oregon nursing a double-digit lead against UConn as Sabrina drains a foul shot to make it 64-49. As for us, I want to get to the Lillard performance for sure, because he done did it again. And by the way, that's the end of quarter number three. Ducks up 15 at UConn. We will continue to talk some more about the Super Bowl because, you know, the whole Super Bowl thing. I want to get to the Oregon men and the Pac-12 standings and what's coming up this week. The announcement about the five panels on the tower at Hayward Field. Droughts have really been front and center the past decade in the sports we follow. Actually, to a point of where I did the research and came up the numbers, and I was like, wow. It's one of those things where it provides hope for a fan who's like, man, my team hasn't won it in fill in the blank, and then they win it. And there are 15 teams I could come up with in the four major pro sports where this is applicable. And obviously your phone calls are always welcome. 284-8571. It's the Oregon Fuel Injected. Well, I guess in a way, yeah. The Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Quick shout out to our friends at Small World Auto. By the way, now that we're into 2020, they're celebrating their 50th anniversary. Same owner, same location, because of your generosity and your loyalty and their amazing customers. They've expanded. They now have 13 service bays, 11 lifts, an unbelievable machine shop. And they wanted to make sure I expressed their appreciation through me, and I can express my appreciation, because when you guys hear an advertiser on this show, and I hear it very frequently, and you know, if your car needs service, if you're looking for you know, a place to hang out, and it's one of those things where in radio, especially in a market like this, if you serve, if you use the services of those who sponsor the shows you like, you are doing your part to support that station and that programming. So thank you very much. Thank you very much. By the way, online, aces their website, really well put together, smallworldauto.com, and they're conveniently located at 2090 West 11th in Eugene, and they would love to add you to their family of loyal customers. All right, that brings us to break time. We'll do just that. We'll come back. We'll have an update and more sports talk. 95.3 The Score.
Today's show is brought to you by the Coors Light Frost Brewed Sports Desk. Coors Light is the official sponsor of your Oregon Ducks and the Coors Light Refreshing Tweet of the Day. Tweet Steve at SportsTalk953 for your chance to get involved. Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
Kyle Shanahan got away from what their strength was, which was running the ball. And maybe if he had run the ball a couple more times when there was about 6 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, we're talking about a totally different result in the game. And isn't that interesting, just watching ESPN here? You know, San Francisco had a 96.1% chance to win in the middle of the fourth quarter, and they got away from what they did well.
Welcome back. That's a former NFL GM Mike Tannenbaum on what went wrong at the end, as we welcome you back to Sports Talk. Satu Sabali just did an Earl Monroe spin move, finish with the right hand, and one, drops the foul shot. 6:50 to go. Ducks up 69-53 at UConn. So, yeah, it's been quite the performance in Stores to this juncture. And I see Coach has gone small with Chavez in there, and at you know, kind of a critical juncture in the game.
Oregon has 0 bench points tonight so far. It has been all of their starters who have all played. Bullies, who played the least amount of minutes at 27. Sabrina's played 33 so far. Your only players coming off the bench are Chavez, Shelley, and Giomi. Giomi's only played 2 minutes.
She was in
tonight.
There for a quickie.
Yeah, so it's not like there's a lot of foul trouble, although Hebert and Mignon both have 3 fouls so far, so maybe they might be taking it. I mean, this is a huge lead kind of late, although you don't want to watch it disappear and take somebody off the floor kind of too early, but Oregon's kind of, they're rolling. They're rolling over UConn right now.
Look, what you notice is Graves is a really good coach and understands that you alter your approach depending on the matchup. And you've seen in really competitive games that he thought would be close, he shortens his bench. You know why? Because he knows in a lot of cases in this conference, he's going to get his subs, his 6 through 10 a lot of time when they play certain teams who they're just better than. And Oregon has done a really good job of offensive rebounding and maintaining possession. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, if you want to jump on in. Feel free, the water's fine. You could text us 321-0824. Try us on Twitter at 953 the score for the station. For yours truly, at Sports Talk 953. For Nick, it is at Rick Nodgers. So, from the U of O Twitter account today, we learned that the redone Hayward Field is going to feature 5 historic track and field duck. I'm going to use the word icons. So, there are going to be the panels that will grace the tower. And so, if you had to pick 5 from Oregon track and field history, I, without knowing much, I know my stuff-ish when it comes to track and field. Figure it's got to be Bowerman, got to be Prefontaine, got to be Ashton Eaton. And I noticed no Bill Dellinger. I'll tell you one, there's one I never heard of. It wasn't somebody like Jordan Hasse or Galen Rupp. And it's two. So it's the 3 were Bill Bowerman, Steve Prefontaine, Ashton Eaton. And then, so if you had to guess the other 2, I will give you a hint. It's 2 athletes, no other coaches or figures. One is from the class of 1960, who also played basketball and shares a first name with the guy who sings Shout. An Animal House, now at football and basketball games, who also represented the United States at the 1960 Rome Olympics, won gold in the 440, and the other, who hails from Houston, was the Duck Class of 2017, silver medalist at the 2019 Worlds in the 800. I guess I'll give a semi-hint. She won 6 NCAA titles, 3 Pac-12 championships, an 8-time All-American, her 3 years as a Duck. So the first one was Otis, my man. Wait till he sees us. Otis loves us. Otis Davis and Raven Rogers. That is so Raven. That is, what's a 5-sided figure? A pentagon. That's a very good pentagon. Now, I also don't know one thing that perhaps, I don't know how permanent these are. Are they going to be like painted onto the panels on the tower or?
No, it's, I saw like a, wow, the mic stand literally just ran away from me. I don't think it really liked what I was going to say. I was looking at a picture or like a rendering kind of thing. It looks like it's going to be like built into the facade of the tower. Like that's going to be the design of it. So I think it's going to be 5 pretty permanent features. I don't know if they're going to have room for other people, if they may feel like they left someone out or someone does something extraordinary down the years or whatever. But it seems like they're going to be very prominent on the outside of the tower, and you should be able to see who is who.
By the way, I just got an interesting text here that I have to bang gears. A texter says he knows we're not mega hockey fans. I'm not. Nick is. I'm an NHL fan, not as much as I was when I lived in New York and Philly. But here's what he said. You have to catch an Oilers-Flames game this year. It's can't miss. The goalie's fault. So I haven't responded to him yet, but Nick, explain yourself and that you actually did a big eye on that during Light 'Em Up.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, so go find our podcast and listen to hour two for Light 'Em Up because I dove into the whole thing, but it was insanity. Like, there hasn't been a goalie fight in
goalie
the NHL
fights, man.
In 6 years. There hasn't been a goalie fight. And to see it happen in like this Battle of Alberta rivalry, which like meant nothing. Basically, for like the past decade, Edmonton was bad. The Flames were bad.
No, it has to go back to the 80s when Calgary beat them in the 86 West Finals and then won the Cup in 89.
That'll do
it. It was the Gretzky era, the last time this rivalry meant anything.
Yeah. So it's been, like I said, for the past decade of what I can remember, meant nothing.
Right.
And it just, boom, there's a dirty hit from a player that people are already kind of on the fence on if they actually like him or not, and he kind of gets beat up in a fight that he didn't want to be in, even though he started it with a dirty hit. It was insanity. And then, you know, they fought for Calgary and Edmonton, who played twice within basically a week, kind of like how Oregon and Oregon State and the women did the Civil War. It was very similar, where they had the Battle of Alberta twice in the same week. And in the first one, you had your fight between Tkachuk and Cassian. They kind of got things out of the way. It was in the first period. Nothing really boiled over. And then you get this goalie fight at the end of the second period, and it was just madness. Like, it looked like
it was real and it was spectacular.
It looked like there was a line brawl. There were sticks and gloves and helmets all over the ice. At one point, the announcer just starts laughing. He goes, look at that yard sale out there. And there's guys like sweeping sticks back to the bench into the penalty box and everything. There was still 30 seconds left on the clock to end the second period. And the refs were like, no, they started sending their players back to the locker room. They're like, we can't either. We're just going to call it, or we can't allow more enforcers to come out to start another line brawl to pick up even more penalty minutes at the end of the second period. It was spectacular. So if you Google goalie fight, the first one that's going to pop up is the latest one between Cam Talbot and Mike Smith, and it is spectacular. Oh, goalie fights are so fun.
And that 1-2 punch now, Dreisaitl, is it? The German?
Dreisaitl.
Yeah. I thought I looked at it up like a week ago, just coincidentally. I thought the accent was on the first syllable.
I've heard it Dreisaitl.
All right. I'll take your word.
Okay.
And, of course, Connor McDavid. They're 23 and 24. They're like mirrors of each other. I think they have the same amount of goals and just about the same amount of points. They're fun to watch.
It's a two-point difference, and these two teams now don't play each other until the final day of the regular season, where hopefully a playoff spot in the Pacific is on the line and potentially home ice for the playoffs, where you could very easily get a Battle of Alberta in the first round of the NHL playoffs, and that's going to feel like a conference final right out of the gate.
Yeah, it's going to have a little bit of Colorado-Detroit in the 90s feel to it. Oh, yeah. When Patrick Waugh and, the Chris Osgood would meet at, like, center ice during another brawl. That was there was a lot of instigating, would be the best way to put it.
Talbot, like, gets, like, somebody's going for a loose puck and he gets poked or whatever, but he just picks up his glove and he's not even worried about the puck. Like, it could have been live or whatever. He drops three punches to the back of this guy's head and he's lying on his belly face down on the ice, and he just took three punches from a goalie with their glove, which are heavy and strong, and I'm sure he's athletic, throwing these punches down. Oh, it was insanity.
All right, I got to give a quick update. 2:39 to go. Oregon was up 13 on UConn, and just an unbelievable entry pass from Sabrina underneath to Hebert, who lays it in and gets fouled. I'm thinking you could cancel Christmas. If Hebert hits this, that's a 16-point lead, and she does with 2:39 to go. I know Coach last week said, this isn't as important as far as winning the conference, but if you're this good and you could beat UConn, there's a really good chance you're going to win the conference and end up in Portland with a shot at going back to the Final Four. So, while he was downplaying it because that's the 100% right thing to say, on a national level right now, this is magnitude stuff. This is going to be scrolling all night long, both coasts, on SportsCenter, Oregon winning at Utah. This would be the first time.
UConn.
Didn't we go through this?
I did that during my first update. Yeah, that was my
bad. Yeah, didn't we go through this when Stephen called? They were playing Utah, but is he talking about UConn?
Yeah.
But as ESPN pointed out prior to the game, University of Oregon women's basketball never won on the road against the top five team. Huskies are number four, and they just missed both ends of a two-shot foul. So, if you're Oregon right now, actually, there's no need to do anything but milk the entirety of the shot clock because you're up 16. And by the way, Sabrina drives, kicks it back out, and now they got more out by the Husky logo, just bouncy, 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 as we get inside 155 to go in this game. My goodness, what a story. Moore drives, lays it in, and she's fouled. Toast. Count it. What a win. Jeez, they beat Team USA, they won at UConn, and the game against Stanford on ESPN with a sellout, they won by 32. This team's just fantastic, and I know I sound like a PR leg of the University of Oregon Athletic Department or ticket sales. They have four more games. Probably two more in the tournament. If you have not, as a matter of fact, you're listening, you're old enough. If you have kids who are sports fans, get out there and see Sabrina. See Ruthie Hebert. See this team. You'll thank yourself. I'm telling you. Geez, Chavez just missed a three, and they got another big offensive rebound. They're going to take it down inside a minute. I'm so happy I had my wife tape this. I'm going to go watch this again.
Satu Sabali has a double-double. Sabrina is a rebound and an assist away from a triple-double. She's got 9 and 9. Ruthie Hebert had a double-double as well. I think Sabali, to get her double-double, ripped away a rebound right in front of Sabrina. And I could tell there was a couple passes where Sabrina's dishing it off really quick, hoping that somebody's going to pop off a quick shot so she can maybe get that assist for to get the double-double or a triple-double here. So she's very close to getting one against a UConn team that had never given one up before.
No, and this is amazing. And now Coach is emptying the bench, bringing in Winterburn and Shelley and Giomi, so his super-duper stars can get their ovation and get their love. And you can see the green and yellow behind the bench, standing ovations. They're up 18 inside a minute to go. Wow! Cannot wait to talk with Coach. By the way, Taylor Chavez just picked the pocket, and she drives in for a layup, and she misses it. But you know what? We're going to forgive her, okay, this time. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's take our final break. We'll come back. We'll have the tweet of the day and wrap up a Monday of Sports Talk on 95.3 The Score.
And now, it's the Coors Light refreshing tweet of the day.
They are trending, twittering, tweeting, you name it.
On Sports Talk with Steve Tannen.
LOL, laugh out loud, OMG, oh my God, WTF, why the face?
Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, Doc Nick.
Thank you, host Steve. Nick Rogers here at the Coors Light Frostbird Sports Desk for the Coors Light refreshing tweet of the day. Coors Light, mountain cold refreshment that is made to chill. I have to run through some tweets from Super Bowl Sunday that were fantastic from @OnionSports.
Onion!
Fox adds highlighted line on field showing women how far away they should stand from Tyreek Hill. That was spectacular. The Onion came back with, "She's about my age," reports mom watching halftime show. Very funny. What else do we have here? I made a joke about Kyle Shanahan blowing a lead with the Falcons and also blowing a lead with the 49ers in the Super Bowl. It was the Spider-Man pointing at Spider-Man meme.
Right.
At Brian Williams, at Brian W.I. 220-89219. I hope that's not his phone number. I just read it out on the air. He tweeted me, "Funny it happened on Groundhog Day." That's the ultimate irony for,
that's really good.
Shanahan to have that happen to him. and then the Kansas City, Kansas celebration was so large and people were launching fireworks that the Kansas Weather Service Twitter account posted a time lapse of like explosions and changes or whatever of people tracking fireworks going off around the Kansas City area. Which is just insane that that happened. But the Kansas City police, at KC Police tweeted, "It's a Super Bowl victory, not a purge." Calm down there. It's insane. What else do we have? Oh my gosh, there are so many from today as well. There was, hold on, I'm scrolling to find it. I didn't plan this out very well. From at SpencerShaw34, tweeted out, "When you predicted Patrick Mahomes would win the Super Bowl all the way back when y'all were in high school, posted a photo from his yearbook. What are you looking forward to most about your class reunion?" And Spencer Shaw put in quotes, "Seeing Patrick Mahomes' Super Bowl ring."
Really?
In high school. Nice. How great is that? Oh, geez. What else do we have here? Oh, Troy Aikman. So a while back, the Athletic Kansas City posted a story of like, already in two seasons, Patrick Mahomes has passed for 33% of Troy Aikman's passing yards in, or touchdowns in his career.
Wow. Like and a Troy, 50 in a year. Right. That helps.
Troy Aikman tweeted, in case you missed it, "Talk to me when he has 33% of my Super Bowl titles." And the Athletic today tweeted, "Hello, Troy Aikman." Which is great. But our tweet of the day is from yesterday. It's another good one. It's from Wilfred Brimley at Real Wilfred B. "Supposedly I'm coaching this evening," and he posted a pic of Andy Reid, which is just too good. It was incredible, the number of people tweeting Wilfred Brimley thinking that Andy Reid was in the game, and then Wilfred Brimley being shocked that young people knew who Wilfred Brimley was. It was all insane. So thanks to at Real I just got rid of his Twitter handle. Wilfred Brimley, the refreshing tweet of the day. Follow the station handle on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at 953thescore. I'm on Twitter at Rick Nodgers. Steve is on Twitter at SportsTalk953. Don't be a jerk. Just do it.
JDI. So it's making the rounds on Twitter after Oregon absolutely torched UConn 74-56. They led wire to wire. They never trailed. Sabrina Ionescu told Holly Rowe after handing, by the way, that's the worst loss ever for UConn at Gamble Pavilion. Like I mentioned earlier, they also play in Harvard. That's where Baylor had beaten them. I said Hartford.
I thought it sounded like Harvard.
No, okay. Hartford.
All right.
It's Connecticut. I'm from there. Trust me. She told Holly Rowe, "I think we should be the barometer." I mean, that's a smoking hot comment. And that is the first loss there in 7 years. The last time UConn lost in that building was Notre Dame in 2013. I mean, at this point, I guess there are two boxes left to be checked because they did make a Final Four, but they didn't win a Final Four game, so it would be win a Final Four game and win a national championship. They've done everything else. I mean, they beat Team USA, something that's happened once before and hadn't happened in 20 years. They, you know, handed Stanford that loss here and sold out ESPN proper and... beaten by, what, 32 points, I think, with the eyes of the nation, as the attention was once again centered on what is, in essence, become the epicenter of college basketball. First, they shared it with Knoxville and the late Coach Summit, but UConn is the standard by which all are judged. And they went in there and kicked her rear end. And Sabrina with 10-9-9, and... she is 18 assists, 52 rebounds away of joining that club of which there are no members in college. 2,000 points, 1,000 assists, and 1,000 rebounds.
A club?
None. Not any guy, woman, Division I, ever, never, ever.
A club with no people in it. The best club or the saddest club?
At that point, it's the best club. But, yeah, might have a couple of things to talk about with our guests tomorrow. All right. Yeah. I've gotten some of the emails of for those who wanted to talk about some of the commercials they enjoyed yesterday. I like the Reese's Take Five. That was one of my favorites. Where were you born under a rock? Were you born yesterday? Were you raised by wolves? Are you clueless? Do you have your head in the sand? Are you from another planet? And it culminates with a guy walking into the office, literally with his head straight up his bum. The Groundhog Day. Groundhog Day, I believe, came out in 1993. I would have to double check on that. So Groundhog Day, the catch-up, 27 years later, that was pretty funny. I did not like the Mountain Dew ad with Bryan Cranston and his whole deal on Jack Nicholson in The Shining. It creeped me out a little bit, I got to be honest. Pack the Car with Big Poppy and John Krasinski from The Office and Leatherheads. And I guess right now his big role is Jack Ryan. Is it Jack Ryan? Great show. Netflix, I would assume. Amazon Prime. All right. Yeah, it's kind of a kick-ass show, really kind of Homeland in a semi-different way.
It's a Tom Clancy thing, right?
Right,
so it's
right,
very that. Tom Clancy-like.
Yeah, it's very Clancy-y. Winona for Squarespace, which I still don't know what it is, just sitting on the side of a snow-plowed road in Minnesota, just creating a website. Oh, that's what I guess.
I was either going to jump in and say she's building a website, or you were going to explain what she was doing, which explains
the business.
You were going to get there.
Eventually, Chrissy Teigen and John Legend for Genesis Motor. Very clever. I really like them. They're incredible philanthropists. And the Cheetos, where somebody hands a baby and it's like, can't touch this. MC Hammer can't touch this. That I thought was really clever. The only downside to yesterday was I lost my parlay. I had Frisco plus 1.5, parlayed with the under 54.5, but thanks to Lee Sterling, I hedged my bet by betting some cabbage on the under in the Anthem. It was supposed to be 1:56. It went 1:49. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. And for I think $8, I got paid 6-1 on the Niners opening the scoring with a field goal. So my $120 parlay loss was hedged by winning $60. So I still got more than $100 in my account to get ready for basketball now. All right. Appreciate everybody hanging. Have yourselves an amazing evening. Thanks for listening to Crunch Time and Sports Talk on 95.3 The Score.
He goes!